Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another edition of Real Science Friday. I am Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, software engineer and creation speaker.
And Fred is also the webmaster for the esteemed Creation Research Society. What a great group.
It is. But today, Bob, we're going to talk about some more articles in the Creation Magazine.
Creation Magazine. Just this week, I did an interview with an astrophysicist from Answers in Genesis, Dr. Jason Lyle. We did a Creation Museum summer update. And so now we're looking at the Creation Magazine, but it's from another group, right?
Yeah, Creation Ministries International out of Australia.
Yeah, what a fabulous magazine this is. And we've already talked through some of the articles in here. There's one now called Answering the New Atheist. And this is a Lyle Weinberger and Doug Wilson. And he's the author of Letter from a Christian Citizen.
That's right. And this is a really good article about how to confront atheists who are, you know, constantly trying to belittle the Christian faith. Mm-hmm. He has a quote in here that talks about how he said that Christian theists, they would pat us on the head and say, you can be allowed your silly little superstition, but it's beginning to dawn on them that they might lose and that they're starting to panic because there really are incredibly solid answers for what they, what atheists, you know, the arguments they use against Christians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, as he mentions in the article, we need to always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that is in us.
Yeah. In fact, we just printed beautiful glossy bound copies of the debate I had with the resident atheist online at theologyonline.com. His name is Zakith, and he's a psychologist. And he and I had a 10-round moderated debate, Battle Royale 7, Does God Exist? And now we've got it, just beautiful printing of that debate, Fred. It's really fun. In fact, a lot of people have been reordering that because now we have it bound. We used to sell it as a manuscript, a loose-leaf manuscript. But, yeah, these debates against atheists are, you know, they're important, and boy, do Christians have solid answers and rebuttals for these godless arguments.
Yeah, they tell us we have a blind faith and they mock our faith, but really our faith is an intelligent faith. Mm-hmm. It's not some blind, superstitious hope. If anything, theirs is a blind faith, as, you know, as they would define it.
The laws of physics have no logic functions, yet somehow from that arose DNA and the sophisticated information-rich language of biological life.
Yeah, did Jesus just expect us to believe, just have faith that he, is that all he told us to do?
No, not at all. In fact, he said, look, if I testify concerning myself, my testimony is not credible because when people speak for themselves, they often lie or exaggerate. So he said, don't accept me on my own testimony, but look at the evidence. The New Testament, the book of Hebrews says, faith is the evidence of things not seen.
That's right. And John the Baptist, who is one of the great believers, even he had doubts at one time, and he sent messengers to Jesus asking him, are you really the coming one? Now, what was Jesus' answer? Was it, well, ye of little faith?
No, he said, look at the evidence.
Exactly.
Look at the evidence. And in the Gospel of John, Jesus says clearly, he says, if I testify concerning myself, my testimony is not credible. But there are other witnesses that testify of me, namely the prophecies in the scriptures and the works that he had done and the extraordinary testimonies to Jesus Christ, the central figure of human history.
That's right. And Bob, let me read another quote from this article. Hmm. The philosopher David Hume, himself a skeptic, showed several centuries ago that there is no real way to get from is to ought. How do I get from a description of the way things are, the rate of acceleration when something's falling or the way an animal reproduces, to the way they ought to be?
Okay, so David Hume said there's no real way to get from is to ought, from what is, like the laws of physics, to what ought to be, like a terrible crime of, let's say, lynching an innocent man, lynching someone. Well, the laws of science do not say it's wrong to hang an innocent man from a tree. The laws of science don't say that. So how do you get from what is to what ought to be? And you know what, Fred Williams? I've got a fascinating quote from Albert Einstein about this. I recently posted on the internet at Theology Online a Christian answer to Euthyphro's dilemma. This is something Socrates came up with 2,500 years ago, an argument against God. And so we posted a Christian answer to that. And in there, I quote Einstein, because Albert Einstein, one of the most brilliant men that we know of in history, in 1936, he famously wrote that the most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it is comprehensible. So he said, why is it that the world of subatomic particles should make sense? Why is it that the laws of physics should be so beautiful and easy to describe with mathematical perfection? Why is that? But then he went on to say this. In 1944, he talked about the ability to get from matter to ideas. And that's sort of what David Hume is talking about. How do you get from is, what is, to what ought to be? And Einstein described this as a gulf logically unbridgeable. Today it's called, linguists refer to this as Einstein's gulf. Einstein wrote, quote, "It's a gulf logically unbridgeable," which in 1950, Einstein wrote that science can only ascertain what is, but not what should be. And he excluded from the domain of science value judgments of all kinds. So Albert Einstein said, if you're only taking it from a materialistic, naturalistic worldview, the laws of physics, we cannot make value judgments based on the laws of science.
And he interestingly points out in this article that, you know, how often atheists have this moral indignation.
Right. A moral indignation. Where did that come from?
Where's their basis? Where's their foundation for that?
Quantum physics. Quantum physics say that Christians shouldn't talk. I mean, right. They're being hypocritical. They're drawing conclusions that do not follow from their worldview. If Christians are wrong and we're able to convince a billion people, so might makes right.
That's right.
We're stronger. We're more powerful. We could then eat Muslims. Because what? I mean, the laws of physics can't reject that. They just can't reject it.
Yep. There's no foundation of morality.
Yeah. And they'll spend billions of dollars of tax dollars looking for aliens, Martians. They'll spend billions. Why? They can't prove that. Yet they'll spend billions. And they resent that Christians have the ability even to speak.
That's right.
Wow.
Well, you know, another thing they love to do is this Darwin fish, right? The next article in the magazine.
Oh, that's right.
We have we have the Jesus fish that was common, that is common.
Mm-hmm.
And what did a Darwinist and atheist do to mock Christians?
Well, they take the Jesus fish, which is the ichthys, right? Jesus Christ, God's Son, Savior. The first letter of each of those words forms. If you take the first letter, it spells out fish in Greek, ichthys. And then the symbol of the fish has been a Christian symbol from virtually the first century. You know, partly Jesus said, "I'll make you fishers of men." And he multiplied the fish and the loaves. And for these reasons, in the prophecy, he'll be 3 days and three nights in the earth, in the tomb, as Jonah was in the belly of the fish. And so for these different reasons, and that this Jesus Christ, God's Son, Savior, spells out ichthys, fish. So for these reasons, the fish became a symbol of Christianity. So liberals and unbelievers, they mock Christians?
Yeah, they like to mock it. They like to, you know, I think God likes symbolism. We see that in the Bible. And Satan likes to try to turn that on its head. And so they create symbols that mock Christians. You know, this is anecdotal, but I think the peace symbol is an upside-down cross. It's kind of mocking Christianity, because if you think of when the peace symbol is used, it's most of the time it's with people who hate God, liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's anecdotal, but it kind of, you know, it's same as with this Darwin fish business.
Yeah. Well, there was a researcher who went around different states in the U.S., and wherever he saw a Darwin fish, the Christian fish with feet on it, like it evolved, right? And sometimes they even put Darwin's name in the middle of the fish just in case somebody doesn't quite get it. And so he went around to several states, and wherever he'd see the Darwin fish, he'd leave a questionnaire for the owner of the car. And his name is Dr. Thomas Lessel, associate professor in the Department of Speech Communication at the University of Georgia. And the respondents were pretty interesting. People would fill it out and send it back to him. And here's a couple examples. One guy wrote, "Mainly I did it to annoy the Christian right wing, since they are so fond of putting the fish Christ symbols on their cars." Now, do you think they would mock Muslims?
No.
The crescent Hindus. Moon or Hindus or Buddhists? They wouldn't, right?
No.
They wouldn't even mock, and I'm the Star of David. I'm glad they don't, but they wouldn't. But Jesus Christ gets the wrath of the world.
In a strange way, it's a testimony to what the real truth is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, people curse not in the name of Buddha. And I don't think for some reason, Fred, if you go to Indonesia, I don't think they're cussing in Allah and Muhammad's name. I just don't think it's the case. But they cuss in the name of Jesus Christ.
And when you know, whenever a Christian does something hypocritical, which does happen, they'll hold up that Christian for the world to see. But are Christians the only ones who are hypocritical?
No. If a public school teacher commits a crime and the reporter is doing the crime, he's reporting the story, the crime beat, and he sees he's a public school teacher, he doesn't put it in the story. But if he sees he's the choir director or a pastor or an elder of a church, it goes in the
right
story.
Right in there. That's right.
Right. So it goes in the story when it's a Christian. But if it's someone of another religion, it's not part of the story. And you're right. It's a double standard that in a backhanded way affirms the glory of Jesus Christ.
That's right.
He is the target of the wrath of the unbelieving world.
Now, I try to avoid hypocrisy by not putting a fish on my car. And, you know, my wife told me I shouldn't based on the way I drive, but that's another story.
The way you drive, yeah. Well, we advocate getting from here to there as quickly as possible, as long as you do so safely. So, Fred, this a little more in these quotes here, why people use the Darwin fish. "I use it to display the symbol of my group, which believes natural processes explain the world around us. Creationists are blank idiots." And the guy didn't say blank.
Exactly.
"Creationists are blank, expletive deleted idiots. Get a expletive deleted education. Humans," now listen to this, "humans are no better than chickens, redwoods, fireflies, earthworms, goldfish, algae, or infectious salmonella. Just because we walk upright and have opposable thumbs," spelled thumbs wrong.
And it's so silly. I had a guy on a forum once tell me that that we're so similar to chimpanzees, if you put a chimp into public schools for 5 years, they would think about equivalent to a 13-year-old. In a way, that was partly true. If you put them in a public school.
In a public school, right. Yeah, public schools dumb down the kids. So he was once again a backhanded observation that was worthwhile. But this is a common sentiment that human beings are no better than bugs.
That's right.
Than disease, than salmonella, than earthworms, fireflies. We saw fireflies on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. last week, 4th of July. It was really neat.
Oh, cool.
We don't have them out here in Colorado.
No, we had them in Missouri. I lived there for 5 years.
You did.
Misery.
Misery. Misery, USA. I'm sure you're basing that on the climate.
I am. Absolutely.
Heat and humidity.
Yep.
Whereas in Colorado, it's a balmy 72 degrees right now. Hey, Fred, I grew up in New Jersey. And the fireflies, the lightning bugs, we'd call them, that was a part of growing up. I mean, what a neat experience to go in your backyard with your friends. We had a pool in our backyard, so we always had people over, and we swam into the evening with lights. And then you'd go out and run through the trees and catch lightning bugs. And sometimes you might kill it by accident or on purpose, and you'd squish it on your fingernails, and your fingernails would glow. I mean, it's so cool. God's creative genius.
Oh, absolutely.
To make bugs that glow brightly.
But of course, that all happened by random chance over right. millions of years. That is so silly.
I mean, how's a bug going to get the notion to light up?
Yep. But evolutionists like to put humans really below the animal kingdom. It's just like it said in Romans 1, that they're going to worship the creation and the creature mm-hmm. rather than the creator.
Yeah, that's right. And so this professor of communication at Georgia University said the desire to mock this audience seems to be just as important as any serious message they want to communicate. And by inserting Darwin's name in the place of the fish icon there that's reserved for Christ, then they're ritually profaning Jesus Christ. And so that's what this is all about, mocking Jesus Christ.
That's right.
Yeah. So it's a good article. There's a lot in there. Now we have the next article and this is really cool, pouches, practical pouches. What's this about?
Well, it's interesting. You know, kangaroos have pouches on their front side.
Right.
And then you've got possums that have the pouches on the backside.
Yeah, yeah. And what's interesting is you would think evolution might, if it's going to create animals with pouches, you're going to get them all the same kind. You get just wide variation in everything God does. There's extraordinary variation because he likes it, because he's creative.
Plus, it thwarts a naturalistic explanation.
Oh, it does, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, first of all, how do you explain how a kangaroo, you know, it makes sense to have for a kangaroo to have his pouch in the front. And why would that be?
Well,
if it was on the back of the kangaroo, why would that be a problem?
Well, the kangaroo's hopping.
Yeah, hopping around, that thing would be flying out, huh?
Flying out. Right, because you're hopping forward, and the momentum would send the little kangaroo back out.
That's right.
You'd lose your kid.
That's right. The little guy would go for a ride.
Right.
Whereas a possum has it in the back.
Mm.
Why is that?
They don't hop. And tell me.
Well, it's a ground dweller, right? And it's probably getting a lot of dirt in it if it was in the front.
Oh, yeah. And it digs through its little holes. And if the pouch was in the front, the pouch would fill up with dirt as it's crawling through its holes.
And that's not good.
It's tunnels.
That'd be a dirty house for the kid.
Dirty house. And the evolutionary worldview says that these creatures with pouches, they had a common ancestor that evolved a pouch. But come on, you have a pouch in the front and it's getting filled up with dirt. So it starts to evolve around. Was it on their side for a while? Little mom possum would hold their kid on their hip. And then she thought, well, that's a pain in the neck.
Like one of those man purses?
Yeah, right. And then just let it keep evolving into the back. I mean, it's just a make-believe cartoon version of science.
Oh, it is. So much of the evolution is. There's another interesting part of this article about how kangaroos will clean their pouch. Mm. You know, they lick it clean.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so how does a possum's pouch keep clean? It's on the possum's back.
It's on the back.
So that's a good question.
Yeah.
It's on the back, so obviously the possum's not going to bend his head around and try
right.
to lick his, you know, the pouch clean. But it's important for sanitary reasons. This is where their young are. So how do they clean it? It's a self-cleaning mechanism. It's amazing.
It's extraordinary. My wife is trying to implement that in our kitchen, Fred, the self-cleaning mechanism. Just push a button and the whole kitchen cleans itself. But somehow, but for some reason, we haven't been able to duplicate that technology.
Well, the article says the crusty wads of brown stuff evident in the pouch in the non-breeding season disappear as the pouch becomes a completely different place, according to Professor Elizabeth Dean of Macquarie University, Australia. It becomes glistening, pristine, and almost translucent. You can go in and the back of it is almost see-through, and you can see droplets of clear material on the pouch, she said.
Mm.
Wow. And it's just a squeaky, clean pouch. And, mm-hmm. you know, it cleans itself.
And that is so neat, right? So the kangaroo can clean the pouch because it's in front of her, and the possum can't. So there's this extraordinary automatic cleaning mechanism that God gave the possum.
Now, which of these two animals do you think our wives would like better?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, if God cares that much about a possum, think of how much he cares about us and our children. and our grandchildren. So God's love and provision is just beyond what we could comprehend. So now, hey, Fred, the next article is called Liquid Gold, and it's about gold in the ground. And this is fun because geologists outside of creationist circles, they believe, like they always say, well, it
took millions of years for gold to form.
Yeah. That geologists believe that gold deposits form over long periods of time, perhaps hundreds of thousands to millions of years. But there is a gold deposit, the Lihir gold deposit in Papua New Guinea, that is changing that. There is a paper published in the journal Science, and they got two New Zealand geologists. By the way, we went to New Zealand, 10 of us,
for a week to protest
against Bill Clinton.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, we were in Auckland, New Zealand. Fred, we had the whole country aware of who we were, why we were there, and what our message was, and that Bill Clinton was evil, and they should not be deluded or seduced by his wickedness. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah, that was over the Juanita Broderick
thing, pretty much. Bill Clinton raped a campaign supporter, Juanita Broderick, volunteer.
That's right.
And yeah, that's an extraordinary story. It's online at shadowgov.com. We have our own report of that at shadowgov.com. So these two New Zealand geologists, they obtained a water sample from below the Lihir mine by lowering a customized probe down a deep shaft. And it's fascinating what they found out, because there's a certain concentration of parts per billion of gold. And they found out that the concentration of gold dissolved in the water was 15 parts per billion. Now, that seems pretty small, but what they calculated the rate at which the steam was escaping this mine, and these two geologists estimated how much gold is being added to this deposit every year, and they concluded that the entire deposit, all the gold in that mine, could have been laid down in only 55,000 years. Now, that's a lot different than the millions of years that's generally believed, and that's extremely quick by uniformitarian standards, and we see this over the decades. I've been a creationist, Fred. Have you seen this? They say, well, this take millions of years. Then they study it, and they say, well, actually, it takes tens of thousands of years. Then they say it could take hundreds of years. Sometimes they say they don't take 2 hours.
Yeah, I had a geologist friend of mine tell me that Mount St. Helens overturned 90% of what geologists knew.
90%
of everything they knew. And he said he's had that admitted to him by secular geologists. That just overturned their knowledge. You know, it's interesting that in this article, a secular geologist refers to Mount St. Helens. He said that my gut feeling looking at Lihir is that it formed in the same time it took Mount St. Helens to blow up, a month, a day, maybe as short as 5 hours.
Mm. 5 hours. And I was talking about that Heart Mountain detachment, where they said it took millions of years for this one mountain up north near Yellowstone to break apart. And now National Geographic and all these science and geologist magazines saying, well, we think it took 2 hours. And they're serious, 2 hours. And in this very article, two other scientists quoted in New Scientist magazine, two other researchers, they said, you know what? The 55,000 years for this gold deposit, not millions. They say, we think it was quicker because we think that the content, it was more gold rich going back a ways. We think it could have been 50 or 60 years for this gold deposit to form. And that's happening over and over and over. You can't
everywhere
count the times.
And, but are kids going to hear about this in the public schools?
They're going to hear it on Real Science Friday.
They are.
Live.
And, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm on this show, because for 30 years I was brainwashed and believed that nonsense.
Oh, yeah. And so we're going through Creation Magazine. We only have 2 more minutes. Can we do one last story, Fred? What do you think?
Sure.
Which one? Pick a story.
Well, let's do the bat and the horse. That's kind of funny.
The bat and the horse story is funny. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Evolutionists are saying what?
Yeah, they're saying that the bat is more closely related to the horse than the horse is to a cow. This is based on what are called
retrospons
in the DNA.
Yeah, and it's just like saying that chimpanzees are only 1% different than humans. That's not true. But if it were true, I mean, there's 3 billion base pairs of amino acids. 1% is a massive quantity of information.
Oh, absolutely.
But that's been discounted years ago now. They're up to over 5% difference between chimps.
At least,
right. Over 5% difference. But so here, based on that kind of logic, which is not reasonable, but it's easy for evolutionists and atheists to grab onto, they say, look, humans are just like chimps. Oh, we must be animals. Now they're saying that horses are just like bats. Horses are more closely related to bats than they are to cows. I mean, it's just insane. Their assumptions make them look like cows and monkeys time and time again.
Oh, absolutely. They'll look at the DNA and they'll make ad hoc predictions, and often they're wrong anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were shocked to discover that bats and horses share a higher degree of DNA similarity than horses and cows.
And then towards the end it says, we need to look at fossils from a new point of view.
Yeah, right.
Because you find really old bat fossils. You know, the fossils are, by their age paradigm, 60 million years or older.
Right, and they have this.
And yet
this,
the horse evolved supposedly like 45 million years ago.
Yeah, except that in America it evolved in one direction, and in
South America it evolved differently.
I think that's because toilets drain the opposite direction south of the equator. So
it's Fred, a cartoon theory.
It is a cartoon theory.
Science.
So we're out of time, but can we do this again, Lord willing, another Real Science Friday, maybe next Friday?
Definitely.
Oh, that'd be exciting. This is Bob Enyart and Fred Williams, the webmaster for Creation Research Society. And if you like creation evolution, you could send a donation of $100 to Bob Enyart Live, and we'd be happy to get you a free subscription or a gift subscription. Cost you $100 to Creation Magazine, but you'll also help Bob Enyart Live stay on the air. And we have a science pack. You could go to our website, kgov.com, and go in our science department on our store and check out the science pack. We have debates, we have Age of the Earth debates, and fabulous books on creation, evolution, science, the global flood. You'll love it. And Maranatha Christian Center, what a great school. In Arvada, Fred, you like that school?
It's a great school. My two kids go there.
Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada. And may God bless you all. Have you seen the Bob Enyart Live catalog? It's got so many neat resources, like videos such as Get Out of the Matrix, when I debated a college philosophy class, and Eagle Eggs, when does an eagle become an eagle? Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection, and God and the death penalty. And then there's Video Fruitcake with hilarious liberal callers. So call in and ask for the Bob Enyart Live catalog, or get it on the web at kgov.com. Of course, all these materials are listed and described on the internet, or call us at 800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We'd love to send you a Bob Enyart Live catalog, so give us a ring.